The following is a class given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on June 18, 1997 in Alachua, Florida. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 25, Verse 30.
Tad etan me vijanihi. Yataham mandadhi hare. Sukhan buddhi yadur bodham. Yosha bhavat anugrahat. Om tat sat. Translation by His Divine Grace to the A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. My dear son, Kapila, after all, I am a woman. It is very difficult for me to understand the absolute truth because my intelligence is not very great. But if you will kindly explain it to me, even though I am not very intelligent, I can understand it and thereby feel transcendental happiness. My dear son Kapila, after all, I am a woman. It is very difficult for me to understand the absolute truth because my intelligence is not very great. But if you will kindly explain it to me, even though I am not very intelligent, I can understand it and thereby feel transcendental happiness. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Knowledge of the absolute truth is not very easily understood by ordinary, less intelligent men. But if the spiritual master is kind enough to the disciple, however unintelligent the disciple may be, then by the divine grace of the spiritual master, everything is revealed. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur therefore says, Yasya prasadat. By the mercy, yasya prasadat. By the mercy of the spiritual master, the mercy of the supreme personality of Godhead, Bhagavat prasada, is revealed. Devahuti requested her great son to be merciful towards her because she was a less intelligent woman and also his mother. By the grace of Kapila Deva, it was quite possible for her to understand the absolute truth, even though the subject matter is very difficult for ordinary persons, especially women. Thus end the Bhaktivedanta Swami translation and purport of the Srimad Bhagavatam, text 30, chapter 25, canto 3 of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the matter of the glories of devotional service. Harihi Om Tat Sat. So here we are. We can see how, although Devahuti is the mother, she has accepted Kapila at this present moment as her guru. Therefore, she is presenting herself very humbly before the spiritual master and begging for transcendental knowledge. When I first joined the temple in 1968, some devotee told me that whenever you go before the spiritual master, you should always praise the spiritual master and humble yourself, present yourself in a very humble way, and ask for some mercy, ask for some blessing. That seemed like a very simple advice, and so That they gave me one other advice. Always try to think of good questions to ask at the end of class that were appropriate to the class. So I remember I would always, every time I went before Srila Prabhupada, I would always say, Srila Prabhupada, you know, you're the most merciful, Prabhupada, you're the kindest, or whatever. And then I would humble myself. One time I remember I said, Srila Prabhupada, I'm the most fallen. He looked at me, you're not the most anything. Just to humble me. Because it was a daily affair, I would be seeing it every day, so I would always be offering. So it was not always like mechanical. You would get responses that were unexpected. I remember one time I prayed to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I want to serve you life after life. He looked at me and said, why do you want to make me come back? I had to think about that. What did I say wrong? I thought it was the right thing. And I thought, even life after life, Srila Prabhupada. Even if I'm not, if I'm not taken back to the spiritual world and I'm to take birth again in the material world, I want to serve you. Nothing else. Of course, I don't, those stick in my mind because they were the unexpected, but otherwise so many other, I don't remember exactly, but Prabhupada smiled and accepted. So it seems that's the principle that one should do when you, and Prabhupada in fact said that in his books, when we forward to the deities, we pray, we always offer glorification, we humble ourselves, and then we get the blessings. So that applies to from disciple to guru. And here, although Devahuti is a mother, but now she's also a disciple. So she's presenting herself very humbly. She's the daughter of Swayambhuva Manu, probably the most intelligent woman in the entire universe. Aristocratic family, the wife of the great Rishi Kardama Muni. She has got all the good qualities, but instead of presenting herself as very intelligent, she's presenting herself very humbly. So because I'm in this humble position, because I'm in this less advantageous position, I need your mercy more. You see, that is a special recommended technique to get the Lord's mercy. Instead of presenting all our credentials of how qualified we are to get the, our qualification, as we discussed yesterday, is how we can get the mercy, because Lord Chaitanya, maybe the first day, he had given that blessing also to Dvaita Gosai, that he would give his mercy to the most fallen. Especially in Lord Chaitanya's movement, we can present ourselves in a very humble way. That doesn't mean we should be fallen. Once we get the mercy of Guru and Krishna and we come out of our fallen state, we should remain out of it. Even though we may present ourselves in a very humble position, knowing that without mercy of Guru and Krishna, we can again go back in the pits of the material whirlpool. Right. We heard that here near Alachua there's a Santa Fe River. Is that what it's called? And the Santa Fe River is going full speed, full river, all of a sudden, poof, it goes down in the ground, disappears, comes up 3 kilometers or 3 miles later. Is that true? Right. So here we see that how the big river can go, suddenly disappear. There's no use of being proud because similarly we can go, suddenly disappear from devotional service if we're not careful, if we're too proud. So you need to try to remain humble. That's very difficult because the mind is always looking for fame, adoration and distinction and trying to take everything as a cue to see how special I am. But therefore we need to consciously make a decision how we want to pray, how we want to present things. It's not that we just have to accept whatever the mind comes up with by default. Again, computers, they have the default setting. We don't want the default setting. We want the setting which is given by our previous acharyas,
Mahajana Janagata Sapunta. We want to follow in the footsteps of the Mahajana. So how they are presenting themselves, how they are praying, that's how we should take our cue and follow in their footsteps. So Prabhupada stresses on this. Actually, today, in the world, most people are less intelligent. Because Kalo Sudra Sambhava, in Kali Yuga, everybody is born as a Sudra. Previously, people were born with Brahminical and Kshatriya qualities, and they had some special intelligence. Compared to them, generally speaking, although there are some exceptions always, women were considered to not be as intelligent as the top Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. They were categorized amongst the Vaishyas and others. Although some women had very special qualifications. But today in the world, everybody is born as a Sudra. So who is special is very difficult to say. Where is the Brahmana that can claim having so much intelligence? Very rare. Even when Advaita Goswami, he was performing the Srat ceremony for his father. At that time, they had so many Brahmanas there, caste Brahmanas, so doing the ceremony. And part of the ceremony is to offer bhoga to Vishnu and then give the prasadam to the senior most Brahmana present. So Advaita Goswami looked around and said, I want to give the prasadam to Haridas Thakur. And they protested, why Haridas Thakur? I mean, he's not even a born Brahmin. He's born in a family of Muslims. Should give to one of the Brahmanas, born Brahmanas, so-called. Nobody's actually born a Brahman. You become, by birth, Sudra, by samskara, you become Brahmana. By the process of initiation, Murali Varaka reminded us how, what's that mantra? Everyone heard? One becomes a dvija by the touch of the touchstone to the bell metal which turns it to gold. Just in other words, just by the process of diksha, one is transformed. How that transformation takes effect is a mystical process. Just like nobody exactly knows how you can turn bell metal to gold. But if anybody had that stone that did it, you wouldn't worry about it, right? You wouldn't be asking a lot of questions. You'd just be making, you'd be making gold. Similarly, the process of initiation has got that from a bona fide spiritual master, bona fide disciple. It has this effect. It changes one into a dvija. What is a dvija? It's something special. Twice born. Actually, sometimes people can take it automatic, okay, you know, join the temple, find the guru, take Harinam, take second initiation. But actually, the second initiation is something very special. I was asked this morning to talk something about the Gayatri Mantra. Because just like Raghunath Das, we mentioned that prayer, he says, Nama Sreshtang Manumapi. He said, the greatest, the Harinam, greatest of the mantras was given by the Guru, and also the Gayatri. Sometimes we just take the Gayatri for granted. I mean, I don't feel that I personally chant my Gayatri in the best possible way, but there may be many who do. But it's something I definitely want to take a more, give more attention to, because if we properly chant the Gayatri, we are supposed to be able to control the mind from mental speculation and focus it on Krishna. And if we really chant the Gayatri perfectly, we can hear Lord Krishna's sound of his transcendental flute. I think a few of us have not yet heard that yet during our Gayatri chanting. We have ways to go. So, we can get that transcendental sound vibration. Raghunath Das, he's saying, he took it very seriously. The Harinam and also Manumapi, the Gayatri mantra. No. We tend to take it very lightly sometimes, but it's something that if we chant it very consciously, very effectively, we can get a boost in our spiritual life. But taking the second initiation, in a sense, is like they say in America, I think there's a thing called double jeopardy. Is that, or I don't know if that's the right word. I don't know, because doesn't that mean you get tried for the same thing twice? But what is it when you're taking a double risk? Is it also used in that context? In other words, you get double benefit if you do it right, and you get double trouble if you do it wrong. Taking second initiation, I've seen people kind of take it for granted, and I want to get, keep up with the dasas and dasis, right? They got, I should get. But then they're not strict. And you see people after a second, they take a real nosedive. Because when you're taking second initiation, you're making a declaration to Krishna that now I understood aham brahmasmi, I am not this body, I'm spirit soul, and I'm going to act like an embodied spirit. I'm no longer going to act like a glorified animal. And therefore, everything we do is considered, just like we saw this morning, our Radhakanta was wearing his prison uniform, as a prison guard or something. So when you're in uniform, you have to really act properly. And then they say, well, a policeman, even if he's in uniform or not, he's always a policeman. He has a separate, it's like, even if you know he's your policeman, you're getting robbed, but he's off duty, you still expect him to come and save you, right? Similarly, a brahmana, it's not like, you're on duty or off duty. You're always supposed to act like a brahmana. Therefore, what we do, Tulsi Puja, very simple example. Everyone knows, yani itani cha papani, brahmahati itani cha, that every step you take around the Tulsi, you can get forgiven for such great sins like brahmahatya, killing a brahmana. It doesn't say, narahatya, killing a human. It's a brahmahatya, because even worse than killing a human is killing a brahmana. If an ordinary human being kills himself by suicide, he just becomes an ordinary ghost. But if a brahmana kills himself, he gets a special distinction of becoming a brahmarakash, super demon, man-eating, cannibalistic demon. So if a brahmana commits sinful activities, then he gets multiple benefit, multiple chastisement, immediately, more heavy. The people don't know what they're getting into sometimes. If you're a brahmana, be merciful to your guru and be strict. Be merciful to yourself. Because Yamaraj has got a special book for brahmanas. Right? It's like, but if you're careful and you act as a brahmana, you can make quick advancement. That's the advantage. Of course, people, when they're young and enthusiastic, they want to make quick advancement. But we should always remain young and hard and enthusiastic, right? You want to get back to Krishna in this lifetime. And sometimes the brahmanas, they get attacked by Maya like everybody else, but then it's worse, so they should be more careful. They should recover as quickly as possible. So anyway, that process of devotional service is something we need to beg from Krishna and from the Guru. And that's what Devahuti is showing. And there's so many things, of course, that can deliver us. We brought up, even without formal initiation, sometimes people get back to Godhead. But that's a special Kripa Siddhi kind of mercy case. Normally one needs to go through all this process, accept spiritual master, follow his instructions, take initiations, and then practice carefully. It's important that whoever in your community is worshipping the deity is also following carefully, and the deity is worshipped properly, because it will affect the whole community. There was something happened, a brahmana had a fall down, it was worshipping the deity one place, and Prabhupada said you should bathe the deity with milk. to wipe away, wash away all the effects from that. So it's many things, you know, there's many subtle parts to devotional service. We see the word here that this is durbodham, difficult to understand. Some of these things are difficult to understand. We need to accept from the authorities. But why the Puranas are so special is because they explain very in a story form, a very easy form, so it becomes easy for us to understand. Just like there's a story about the glories of the fourth chapter Bhagavad Gita. You know that? Parvati was asking Lord Shiva, what was the glories of different chapters of Bhagavad Gita? And she asked him, what is the glories of the fourth chapter? Is there any example? So, oh yes, there's a wonderful example. You see, there was Brahmana called Satya Tapas. He would perform great tapasya, austerities and penances, and his tapasya was so pure and so truthful that he became very powerful. Even Lord Brahma came to visit him. That was how powerful his and sincere his tapasyas were. Then, Indra got worried. Indra thought that this Satya Tapas is getting so much accumulated pious result that if he wants to, he could bump me off of the Indra seat and he could take over Indraship. Because being Indra is you have to accumulate a lot of good karma. Like when Bali Maharaj finally did all that yajnas and he got on the seat of Indra, the first thing here the brahmanas and the gurus told him, that if you want to stay on this seat, you're burning up karma now, you know, like we say in America, mile a minute, but I don't know, I'm sure they didn't say that, but you're burning it up so fast, because sitting on that seat means, you're just burning up karma, good karma. So you better immediately start doing yajnas, if you want to stay there, otherwise you'll be off faster than you know it. So that's when he started doing 100 Ashwamedha yajnas. Actually, when you walk on Navadvip Parikrama, it says every step you take is worth more than a Ashwamedha Yajna. This year we were very blessed by Naveen Krishna Prabhu, was walking with us on Navadvip Parikrama, giving all the devotees his association. It's very nice when the senior devotees and come with the devotees and we walk in the holy dham. How much benefit one gets by walking in Navadvip dham. In the Navadvip dham Mahatmya, Bhaktivinoda Thakur Nityananda Prabhu actually explains, and it's so amazing. It's inconceivable. Even when somebody lays down, it's considered the same as offering your pranam before the devis. Every breath is, you know, everything you do, it's like the glories are just really amazing. And then if you chant 1,000 times, so you get to benefit. So, where was I? Anyway, the Satya Tapas. He was meditating in a place, I think the place's name was called Mayapur. That's why his tapasya was supercharged. So Indra, he was getting worried and paranoid. Actually, there's nothing to worry about. He didn't know, you know. But you know, sometimes the devas, they're called sakam bhaktas. They're devotees of the Lord, but they have desires and they get all frightened that somebody's going to take away their position. So he got worried, and then he said, I better do something to diminish the potency of this Satya Tapas. So then he announced to his in his court that I need some volunteer. I need some volunteers here for the sake of the patria. For the sake of the nation. National sacrifice. For the sake of Devaloka. Who will come and do something for their king? I need 2 gentle, attractive, enthusiastic apsaras to do a special sacrifice for their king, Indradev. So there were two, we used to do something for our king. He's asking for help. So two of the most accomplished and attractive apsaras, they came forward and said, "Well, we'll do anything for you, my lord. What can we do?" I said, "All right, I'll tell you, you come. We have a special assignment. These special assignments for apsaras are not always what they seem to be, as you will soon find out." We know that Indra sent Apsara to take care of Vishwamitra, and because of that, who he sent? He sent Menaka, right? And from that, Sakuntala was born. It seems sometimes Indra, if he feels someone is threatening his position, then he does try to diminish. That's why Lord Chaitanya's prayer, na dhanam, na janam, na sundaring, is very important. We can say, you know, na deva lokam, I don't want to go to the heavenly planets, I don't want... Don't worry, Indra, I got enough problems, you don't have to disturb me. Even if I'm getting any accumulated pious activity, I have no intention, no desire to go there, you can have it, right? But in any case, so Deva Raj Indra told the two apsaras that there's a crisis, you know. There's some person doing tapasya just to take over my position and put the whole kingdom of Deva Loka in jeopardy. Will you do a special sacrifice? I know this is something very difficult for you, but if you can do a special sacrifice, what can we do? You know, they're like here, they're seeing their king and a throne and everything. He's just asking these two young, simple girls, well, you have to go and somehow using your natural skills and all the Bharatanatyam dancing or whatever, it's not Bharatanatyam, I think they have another form, but anyway, Apsara dancing, and go and you have to engage this this rishi. Somehow you attract him and, you know, you have to get him to break his celibacy. So they agreed to take this task, you know. And they went down to come from the heavenly planets and came down to this Satya Tapas. They had a little, even they have a few Gandharvas were sent to give a little backup music. You know, ding, ding, ding. And they had their ankle bells. They got these super ankle bells. Just a normal person hears the ankle bells, forget meditation. It's immediately, you know, attracts their mind. And anyway, we won't go too much into the accomplishments of apsaras, but we know they have air-conditioned bodies. Like according to the temperature, that either goes hot or cold. They don't get old, no wrinkles, so on and so forth. So one day when it's time to pass away, they get old and pass away apparently. Someone was saying yesterday in the Devaloka, a week before they're going to die, their garland starts to wilt. And then everyone stays away. Uh-oh. It's about that time. And they all start to go and preach that you better do the tapasya needed. You better do the austerities needed to come back again after you die. Otherwise, you may never see you again. And if they last week, they bogue it out, that's the last time they see, you know, for another spin around, who knows where they go. But if they do tapasya, apparently they can get back. And if we don't know too much about that, hasn't been our preoccupation. But someone was mentioning yesterday, one of my senior godbrothers, so that was interesting. Then here these two young apsaras, they go down, there's the music playing, and they're dancing, you know, ching, 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 the ankle bells. They hear Satya Tapas, he's deep in meditation. Actually, he's a devotee. He's deep in meditation and Krishna in his heart. He's trying to meditate and he's hearing, you know, ding, ding, ding. And he said, what is going on? You know, it's like, you know, he's trying to meditate, you know, and he said, you know, da da da, whatever, I don't know, whatever, you know, the exact music they're playing, but you know, there's some. So then it is, they're meditating, and you know, he says, he sees the two girls, and they see he's looking at us, and they're, oh, here, you know, this is a good sign, right? He broke his meditation, he's looking at us. So they get like a little encouraged that, you know, we're making progress here, we're going to please our King Indra. And they're smiling at him and using all their feminine charms. And then he said, what is going on here? I'm trying to meditate. You know, what's the whole, you know, the Apsaras and the Gandharvas. So what is going on here? I want to just meditate. And I'm getting so much disturbance. You might be wondering, what does that have to do with the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita? Don't we get to it? Just telling you the story. We come around to that at the end. So... actually, he was getting angry, just getting really impatient. You know, just stop this. I want to meditate. You know, what is going on? But the Apsara completely, he's moving his eyebrows, you know, like, he's really getting angry. They thought, you know, he's winking at us or something. Or, you know, it's like, so one of the Apsaras, she gets encouraged and she comes forward and smiling. And maybe some of her clothes fall a little bit and expose a little bit of her natural beauty. And the Rishi, he just, Satya Tapas, got so angry. He said, what is going on here? They don't let you alone to meditate anymore, you know. And he just, I curse you two to become trees. Uh-oh. Indra, they've never told us about this option. We're going to be national heroes. We come down, you know, decorated. You go back, Indra special. But this one didn't work, you know. They didn't tell us what happens, what's the downside of it, right? You know, they never tell you that, become CIA or whatever. I don't know, they don't tell you, get shot in Lebanon or something. But here you're going as a secret agent for King Indra, and if you happen to get the wrong Rishi, if he's not a Mayavadi, if he's not just a yogi, he was meditating on Krishna, he could care less about Apsaras. He was already in spiritual bliss. They looked at each other. Uh-oh, we really made a mistake here. The Gandharvas, they split fast, you know. We're getting out of here. They didn't want to stay there. What if they get cursed too, you know? There was no backup music. There was nothing. They're there all alone, you know, like you're on the stage. And immediately they just fell down at the feet of the Rishi and they say, forgive us, we didn't know what we were doing, we were just following orders. Following orders? Who would order you to come and disturb, you know, a humble devotee trying to meditate? We have to tell you, my Lord, it was Lord Indra. Why would Indra want to send you to disturb me? What do I got? What, I didn't cause any problem to Indra. No, he said you want to take over his position. You want to become Indra! You're just following his orders, my Lord. Please forgive us. Take away this curse. We don't want to be trees. And then he could become, I'm sorry, once he cursed, that was like, it's not like, you can't take him back. They go one way. They're like, you know, anyway. You can write once, read many, but you can only give one curse. A curse, you can't take it back. You can adjust it a little bit, but you can't take it back. Like what kind of tree or what place or this or that, how you get out of the curse, that they can adjust, how long you have to be a tree. A tree, you will be. There's no... So they are crying, please, we didn't mean it. I was just, you know, we were just fought. Then he said, you know, why would Indra want to take over? He said you wanted to take over his position. Me? Be an Indra? Never! I don't want to be an Indra. I'll sit up there, watch all you people. I want to chant Hare Krishna. I want to be a devotee. I want to go back to Golok Vrindavan. I don't want to go to Indra Lok. He can have his Indra Raj, Deva Raj. Who wants it? Why does he get his calls on? Poor innocent girls like you have been forced to curse because of this. He felt compassionate being a devotee. Then he thought, what can I do? All right, you'll be two trees on the side of the river Ganges, and there'll be a brahmana called Dharma who will come and read the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita under you, and when he touches both of you with his body, after reading Bhagavad Gita, you'll be delivered from this curse. So boom, there they were, gone as apsaras. Goodbye, Devaraj. Goodbye, everybody. They were there on the side of the Ganges in Benares. Two trees. About 2 meters or 6 feet or something, maybe a little less than 6 feet apart. Twin trees. Standing there, day, you know, there's no snow in Benares, but they get, you know, the wind and the storms and people, what they do sometimes in the river, the sinful people, by the side there. But anyway, there they were standing, and this is Brahmana Dharma, and he would every day come. Here in Florida we have a Dharma Das too, right, in Miami. Every day he would come and he would read the Bhagavad Gita, fourth chapter, sitting under the trees. They never touched the trees. They just sat there and read the Bhagavad Gita, and the trees were saying, please touch us, you know. But every day, so they were listening to the Bhagavad Gita. Even though they were trees, they still had intelligence because they actually were born there because of the curse. So they were hearing the Bhagavad Gita, they were hearing the fourth chapter every day. They were getting purified. They're understanding how the Lord is descending and all the wonderful things in the fourth chapter. How you have to accept a spiritual master. So many things are there in the fourth chapter. So then, one day it was very hot. And after reading the fourth chapter, then Dharma thought, let me just, it's here, nice, cool, under the shade of these trees. Let me just rest for a little bit. So he laid down, put his head on one root of one tree, and his foot stretches, you know, you are a guru. And he's, you know, where do you come from? What happened to the trees? I wanted to, they told him, you see, we were cursed to become trees because we had offended a great Vaishnava, and you read the Bhagavad Gita, fourth chapter, and delivered us. Now we want to learn from you about the science of Bhagavad Gita. And so then he took them home, just to his wife, you know, wasn't really expected, but... and he trained them up in the Bhagavad Gita, and they studied the Bhagavad Gita, and they decided, you know, there's no... Going back to Indraloka is kind of useless, because, you know, who knows what we're going to be sent on to do next. Here's our chance. If we read the Bhagavad Gita while being here on the earthly planet, we can go back to Godhead in this lifetime. So they studied the Bhagavad Gita, read the fourth chapter every day, and simply by reading the fourth chapter, they were purified from all the sinful reactions, and they could go back home, back to Godhead. So there are a lot of occupational hazards being born in apsara. You don't realize that when you're here, you know, think it's all going to be fun. But look at what happened to the Nalakuvir and Manigriva. Of course, that time the apsaras were fortunate. They covered themselves and were very shy before Narad. So they didn't get cursed. But the two brothers, they were so drunken that they got cursed by Narad to become trees also. Had to be very careful. Of course, then we know how Lord Chaitanya, he said that we should avoid offenses to Vaishnavas. There's a matal hati. It's the mad elephant offense. So we can see here, so many things from this verse. So Devahuti is praying to her son Kapila to get the mercy, to get explanation that we should also try to get from the senior Vaishnavas and the spiritual master. Have a spiritual master take our instruction very carefully. Learn the science of Krishna consciousness. I discussed, even if one can't find someone they have faith in as a spiritual master, to take a lifelong initiation and shelter. At least they, if they find someone they see as a representative of Krishna, they could take as a Siksha Guru. Take instruction. Try to learn the science of Krishna consciousness. What's the most important thing here? Devahuti has got desire. She wants to learn Krishna consciousness. Please. And she's humbling herself. She's presenting. Because she's got this desire. And that desire to be Krishna conscious. That's the thing that's irreplaceable. You know, sometimes you're doing chanting in the front and some of the kids are jumping up and down. Some kids, like, you know, I don't know, they're in a bad mood or something. Just like, you know, I won't dance. I won't jump. I won't show any interest. I'll just look here. I won't do any. And what can you do? You know, just like, you know. Of course, sometimes you change the dance tune or you jump, you're running, and sometimes maybe they get into, okay, I'll run. I don't know dance, but I'll get into running. Because they're kids, so maybe somehow they get into it. But it's really, if someone decides, I won't be Krishna conscious, there's really nothing you can do. Rupa Goswami said, you can't private discussion, group discussion, big, you know, lectures and a mass of people. If someone makes a definitive decision, after knowing everything, that I don't want to do devotional service, it's their free will. Bhakti is by free will. You can't force anybody. We have to make it attractive. We have to somehow enliven people that how wonderful it is to be a devotee, how wonderful it is to chant Hare Krishna, what you're missing if you're not. And let somehow get people to see that how wonderful it is, and then they can practice their Krishna consciousness. And then this way, if they decide, okay, let me try to be a devotee, that's the most important. We should have that positive goal that I want to, even if I'm fallen, even if I don't have any qualification, even if I don't even see any hope. Sometimes see devotees say, I don't find any hope, so what's like, then it's almost like, so what's the use of trying? That is Maya. Even I'm unqualified, even I don't have any hope that I can see. But my hope is that Nityananda Prabhu, Lord Chaitanya, they have promised to deliver the most fallen souls. So that being said, there's hope for me. Even a materialistic apsara somehow got the mercy to somehow hear Bhagavad Gita. If we simply get association of the devotees, sadhu sangha, sadhu sangha, sarva sastra koi, lobamatra sadhu sangha, sarva siddhi hoi. Even a moment's association with a pure devotee can change our whole paradigm, change our whole outlook, and we can get all mystic powers. Nope. What can we get? We can get all perfection. Just testing you. See what you wanted there. Sarva Siddhi. We can get all perfection. We can get all perfection of devotional service as the supreme Siddhi. So, we should see what a great mercy Prabhupada has given, what a great opportunity to be Vaishnavas, to be at least aspiring Vaishnavas and chant Hare Krishna and try to approach Krishna. Even though I have no qualification, even though I'm not able, still I'm trying to serve my spiritual master. And I'm simply dependent upon His mercy. So we need to be dependent on Krishna's mercy. That, okay, I may have not any qualification, I may not see how I can do it, but I'm simply depending on the Lord's mercy and the Guru's mercy and the Vaishnava's mercy and the mercy of the Holy Name. Somehow by their mercy I can achieve this greatest of goals. And that humility and that desire is what gives it to us. At least that's what puts us up. And then it's ultimate mercy. We have no... What really gives us the mercy of Guru and Krishna. But that is the mood that puts us in the right place. It's not of any use to just say, well, there's so many great devotees, they didn't make it, so there's no hope for me. So okay, if that gives me a good excuse, then don't try. Might as well just stay in Maya. Shouldn't be like that. Just like the apsara, they're hopeless. They were trees, they were goners, right? But they just pleaded to this Vaishnava, please forgive us. So then he took compassion. Is if we don't see any qualification, what Prabhupada said, that we don't have any taste for chanting, we don't have any desire, that we should be crying that we don't have any desire. Crying that we're not qualified. And if we're not crying that we're not qualified, or crying that we have any whatever desire, then we should be crying that we're not crying. In other words, desire. Lolyam, that kind of desire, I want to be Krishna conscious. If I'm not, I want it. And if we don't want it, then we should really be crying. And if we're not crying that we don't want it, then we should really be crying. That we're not crying, and so on. This is such a beautiful lecture. I never forget. I heard personally Prabhupada say that. Crying that you're not crying for Krishna. In other words, there's no excuse. If we have at any level, whether it's the seventh removed, at some level if we have a bit of sincerity in us that we want to be Krishna conscious, Just fan that. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai. Sri Gaura Nitai ki. Jai. Grantharat Srimad Bhagavat ki.
Jai.
Bhagavad Gita ki.
Jai.
Jai Gaura Premanandi. Any question or comment? Hare Krishna. Got one, two, right in the line here. One, only you get one, right? Pardon? Should we ever take offense? I'm trying to think if there's any specific scripture that tells us not to take offense. And I can't think exactly of a specific scripture, but we know that in the lives of the Vaishnavas, because we're supposed to do sadhu, shastra, and guru, the sadhu examples we have, they generally don't take offense. But sometimes they would take offense, like Narada took offense when the two brothers were naked before him, because he saw that for their upliftment. It wasn't that he was taking offense that, okay, I'm going to punish you because I want to cause you suffering. But he was thinking, how can I deliver these two? They're just wasting their life. They got such a big position and they're just, you know, spoiling it. So sometimes like that, the guru may take an offense. We know that Prabhupada, he asked Nitai Das to leave ISKCON, or he had already left, so don't let him associate or something, because he was spreading poison and contaminating other disciples. When Prabhupada said, you won't get another bona fide guru for 100,000 births. That sounded like really heavy. And I said, oh, Prabhupada, that's so heavy. I mean, that's like 100,000 births. And then I heard 100,000. And the Prabhupada said, no, that's a reduction. Because according to Chaitanya Charitamrita, if you reject your guru, you don't get another guru for 10 million births. If you reject a bona fide guru. So I reduced it. It's like 1%. There might be some cases where someone takes offense that we can see, but generally we see like when Advaita Acharya was approached by Mother Sachi and they said that she's offended you because when Lord Chaitanya was coming to get Visvarupa and then he liked the class too, so they both sat and listened to the class. And Mother Sachi was getting late, the prasad's getting cold, and she got worried because it was an astrological prediction that Visvarupa would take sannyas. And then she became like upset and started saying this, Advaita Goswami, what's he doing with our kids? And, you know, and I don't know, she said something a little bit critical against Advaita Goswami. Well, it wasn't his fault, he just gave me a Bhagavatam class. But she was out of love for her children, she said offensive thing. So that's why she couldn't get love for Krishna because she had offended a Vaishnava. Can you imagine the mother saying, you know, this devotees gives late classes, what a nonsense. That's enough to not get love for Godhead. And what nectar comes from some people's lips, right, about other devotees. We should really be careful that anything we say is truly constructive. And I was being facetious when I said nectar, of course. I mean, I think that's obvious. There's some really horrible things that sometimes people say, totally unconstructive and jump to all kinds of conclusions. And she just jumped to a conclusion without understanding his motive. His motive was simply giving the Bhagavatam class, and it was really her fault. You know, she should have, the sons were just not coming. It wasn't Advaita Acharya's fault at all. So, when she went and it was explained to Advaita Goswami that she had offended him and he should forgive her, he said, her offend me? She's the greatest Vaishnava. She could never offend me. Who am I? I'm not, you know, I'm insignificant. And he was glorifying. Look at her devotion, how she takes care of Lord Chaitanya, spontaneous bhakti. And he started glorifying all the wonderful qualities of Sachimata. And he became so ecstatic just thinking about her qualities that he fainted on the ground in ecstasy. He never forgave her. And Lord Chaitanya, you're never going to get forgiven by him because he's not taking any offense. You see, so that's what he said, touch his feet. Get the dust from his feet. Because sometimes if you offend a Vaishnava, they're not accepting that it's an offense, but the dust from their feet is offended. Because Krishna says that he respects the dust from the feet of his devotees. So even if the devotee isn't personally taking any offense, and normally we shouldn't take any offense, except maybe some rare case where a guru is doing so to protect the devotee. Normally we don't take any offense. We consider that this is my karma, or this is, I deserve worse than this, you know, if I'm getting. Usually we don't, we just look compassionately on such devotees. Even like when Lord Chaitanya was walking along the road and a bunch of drunks were sitting there, winos, whatever, and they were all intoxicated, and one came behind Lord Chaitanya and said, oh, look at Gaura Hari! Ha ha, Gaura Hari! Oh, he sings and dances so nice, and then one came, you know, Hare Krishna, you know, dancing, Gaura Hari, Gaura Hari! And, you know, the other associates were like, you know, who does this guy think he is? You know, it's like minimizing the position of Lord Chaitanya. This is very offensive. And Lord Chaitanya didn't show any symptom of reaction. Just kept on walking. Then the, you know, drunkards, how they can't keep a thought train too long. So he went back sitting with the other guys and then hit the bottle again. And then some devotee said, Lord Chaitanya, you didn't say anything. I mean, this is so offensive. It was so intolerable the way he was acting. Lord Chaitanya said, actually, but he didn't really commit any offense. I mean, he was chanting the holy names. And by chanting the holy names, he was getting so much benefit. That effect of chanting the holy name will stick with him forever. But the drinking, well, that will be finished by tomorrow. You know, see, but the chanting helped him, so it was good, let him chant. So sometimes Lord Chaitanya wouldn't take any offense. Mostly Lord Chaitanya didn't take offense. When Jagai Madai hit Nityananda Prabhu, then Madai went and apologized later, I hit you. He said, no, for me, you're like, I love you like my baby. Like a mother loves a baby. And the mother's holding the baby in the lap, right? The baby kicks the mother, the little baby feet. His mother said, you've kicked me, I'm going to curse you. Right? Obviously not, you know. The mother loves the baby. Once the little baby kicks, you know, it's part of the fun or whatever, the pastimes. Getting kicked by the baby, changing diapers, this is all part of the love of the mother for the baby. But anyway, those kicks are not, they're not, so Lord Nityananda, he said that your hitting me was like a baby hitting the mother. I loved you anyway. That's why I said that even though you've caused me injury, that doesn't mean I'm not going to give you love for Godhead. So I didn't take any offense. So then Madai said, but the Chinese, I feel lousy. I feel like I've offended somebody. So then he said, I offended so many living entities. I caused suffering to innocent women, to people, to men, fear. So many problems I caused people. How will I get rid of that offense? Then Nityananda said, that's true. So you need to do something to serve them spiritually, then you'll get free from your offenses. So then they said, you can build with your own hands a bathing ghat. in the Ganges. That will facilitate people to go and bathe in the Ganges. And by that service to their spiritual life, you will get forgiven for the offenses you committed to others. That's actually preaching and giving books out and giving out prasadam. And so important, because when we preach and we give out the mercy to others, we get forgiven for our offenses. When we chant loudly and Harinam, we get forgiven for offenses. That makes our chanting more pure. So we should avoid taking offense. But if you really feel you've offended somebody and then they haven't acknowledged it, still you somehow got to steal some dust or from their shoe or something, their foot. Or, as we read, if we constantly chant the holy name, that will also, that maybe take a longer time. Do you have, we're a little over time, so this is a... Did you get the story mixed up, or this is another one? Yeah, what happened was, sometimes people get on the GBC's case of getting hate mail sometimes that, from different devotees, that why we're not letting everybody go and listen to anybody they want to, you know, no matter which mutt or which institution they're part of. You know, of course I have, as I mentioned yesterday, trying to propose that we conceive of some way to get sincere people that belong in ISKCON back. But definitely, there is a tradition that we don't listen to anybody and anything. That's from right from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He told Mukunda Datta, you cannot listen to sadhyas, you cannot listen to mayavadis, you cannot listen to yogis, you can't listen to this one and that one. He gave a strict, you know, instruction who we could listen to and who we couldn't listen to. And Mukunda was one of the, he just, you know, a little liberal, you know, he went and started listening to people that he shouldn't listen to. So at one point they came and told, where is Mukunda? And he said, well, he's listening to this person. And then Lord Chaitanya said, that's just, it's enough. I don't want to see Mukunda anymore. He's banished. So the banishing, and it's not, it is in our parampara, sometimes people will get banished. And he was not allowed to see, of course he was just allowed not to see Lord Chaitanya. It wasn't, he could associate with other people, it wasn't a total disassociation, but he couldn't see Lord Chaitanya. Could not associate with Lord Chaitanya. So Mukunda kind of came up and was trying to, you know, walk in every day, sees Lord Gauranga, walk in, said, you cannot see him. What do you mean I can't see him? No, he said, I don't want to see you anymore. Why? You didn't listen to him, he kept warning you again and again, you know, Lord Chaitanya has mercy, forgives, forgives, forgive, but if you just again and again and again, you don't make any attempt to follow, at one point Lord Chaitanya also has his limit, he just, enough. Well, but said, we should try to avoid offenses and try to avoid sins, and then Lord Chaitanya will forgive us so many times, but if we just stop trying, or we just, we don't really make any effort, and again we make the same mistake without really making a sincere effort to correct it. Prabhupada said, Lord Chaitanya, mercy does have a limit. It's a big limit, you know, we get a lot of chances, but there is a limit. We have to think that it's just unlimited. In other words, I can do anything again and again and not try and I'll still get forgiven. When we get into that mode, it's dangerous. He may not forgive us. So this Mukunda, he reached the limit. He was told he couldn't see and he couldn't believe it. Every day, the Kirti is the lead singer, main dancer, right there in the front row, Lord Chaitanya, every day, lifelong friends, was there even when Lord Chaitanya took, later, that's happened later. Anyway. So, he was completely devastated. He went to Nityananda, others, said, please, I have to be, I'll never do it again. It was a big mistake. I'm sorry, I'll never do it again. People went to ask Lord Chaitanya, they said, what, Mukunda? I don't want to hear about Mukunda. He listens to other groups. He doesn't, he's not loyal to us. Don't talk to me about it. You can see him, but I don't want to see his face. He's not loyal. Loyalty is an issue, you know. We want to follow Prabhupada or not. The loyalty was the issue with Lord Chaitanya. So Mukunda then finally, you know, it's like when they saw Mukunda, they'd run, you know, the other way. It's like he had leprosy. It's like because they knew they're going to beg, please, let me help me. When they couldn't do anything, it was too painful. They couldn't talk to Lord Chaitanya. He'd just wouldn't listen to them. They'd be even angry at them, and nobody wanted that. So Mukunda wasn't eating. Just like a madman, he couldn't eat, couldn't just like sleep. He was just crying, you know, what did I do? What did I do? How did this happen? You know, and then, so finally, you know, somebody went up to, this was going on, I don't know, for months or something, and he was just like completely out of his skin. He came up to Lord, you know, it's like a, came up to one of Lord Chaitanya's secretaries and said, no, I told you, nothing I can do. I'm sorry. If I could do something, I'd do it. I said, okay, please just ask Lord Chaitanya, when? I know I can't see him. Okay, I cannot see him. When can I see him? After how much time? That's all I want to know. If ever I'll be able to see him again, ever. And the secretary said, okay, I'll ask that. Secretary went in and said, Mukunda, I'm not. You know, the Lord still was upset. Then he just wants to know when he can see you. Tell him that he can see me after 1 crore of birth, 10 million births he can see me. And he went out and he told Mukunda Datta, the Lord Chaitanya said you cannot see him until 10 million births from now. Mukundadatta said, Haribo, Haribo, I thought I would never be able to see him again. I'm going to see Lord Chaitanya again. I'll see him again eventually. I'll see him again. Haribo, Haribo. It's not a permanent banishment. I'm seeing him again sometime. Haribo. He's jumping and Lord Chaitanya, what is going on? What is all the commotion? You know, and they said, this Mukundadatta, what the heck? Why is he shouting and dancing? I just told him he couldn't see me for 10 million births. No, he thought he would never see you again. He was, you know, that he can see you after 10 million births was such a relief compared to never seeing you, like infinite. Never. To the beat, at least he can see you after 10 million births. He's feeling so much relief that he's chanting and dancing in ecstasy. That was how frustrated, how much desire Mukunda Datta had come to. Then that melted Lord Chaitanya. Alright, bring him in. Don't, you know, we don't want to put Lord Chaitanya's mercy to the test. You know, we don't want to stretch it. We want to be very careful. Avoid taking unnecessary risks. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.